Q3 results and fourth quarter projections with top market analyst and Way of the Renaissance man, Jim Woods, on this episode of Unlock Your Wealth Today, your life fully invested.
Welcome back to the show, Jim. Did we just fly through summer or what?
Well, I didn't fly through summer because I got grounded in the Southwest Airlines shutdown on one of the weekends of the summer. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to fly that that day. I had to get another airline. Fortunately, there's some competition in the airline industry. So I managed to make it here. So.
Well, and it's been quite an interesting summer. You know, the last time we chatted, we were celebrating at Freedom Fest and all of the different fun guests that we were interviewing. And we've still got more Freedom Fest interviews to show this season as a result. But what happened market-wise since you last visited the show and you talked about what you were thinking was going to happen this quarter?
So for the first time in some time, we saw actually negative returns on some of the major indices. Like, for example, the S&P 500, while it didn't turn negative in the third quarter, it was only up 0.23%. So it was basically flat for the quarter. Now, as for the Dow, we saw that down 1.9% in the third quarter. So that was a very, the market basically proved itself vulnerable to some trading and to some selling. And I think that if you've been keeping an eye on markets this last few months, you'll know that we finally saw a kick in of volatility on to the, you know, and some selling to the downside, some what I call risk off selling, because there was a lot of risk that faced the market towards the latter half of the quarter. And that caused a lot of money to come off the table. There's a lot of profits being made since say April of 2020. And so some of those profits came off the table. Just to finish up on the indices, the NASDAQ composite, which is more tech heavy and more, you know, large cap oriented, more technology stocks, that was at also down about 0.4% or so. And then the Russell 2000, which is the small cap indice, that was down 4.5% in the third quarter. So we saw the S&P managed to maintain its kind of levels where it started the quarter. But the rest of the three domestic major domestic averages were down. And that tells you that there was some, you know, that the selling finally came to, you know, the chickens came home to roost, as it were, in the market, or the bears came home to roost, as it were. Do bears roost? I don't know. Probably not.
They hibernate.
Well, they came out of hibernation a little bit. Now, of course, a 4% decline in the Russell and a 1.9% decline in the Dow, that is not bear market territory, but we did experience the first 5% pullback from most recent highs, 5% below that in this third quarter. And that was unusual because we had not experienced that in over like 240 trading days, something like that. So it was almost a full year before we actually saw that market was susceptible to a 5% pullback from its most recent highs. So now we're far from a bear market at this point. I mean, that's like a 10% below, you know, the high. So we're not even close to that at all. But what we did realize is that markets are susceptible to selling off, which we all knew that, of course, but we hadn't seen that in a while. Now, one of the big things, if we were to look at a chart of the S&P 500 and the major indices, you would see a big decline in late August. And that was because of a couple of different things. One was the debt ceiling and budget battles in Washington. Washington returned to becoming a factor for the markets because for a while, long while, it was not a big factor. Since the Biden administration took office, there wasn't a lot of like kind of Washington uncertainty or Washington movement that was going to cause any kind of issues. But this quarter or this past quarter, it did happen like that. So what we saw is people were worried about the budget and the budget reconciliation process. the $3.5 trillion that people were looking to spend, and that deal melted down. And then there was the infrastructure bill that was supposedly also going to be passed, or it passed the Senate at one point. It was about $1.5 trillion. That got shelved for the meantime. So there's been no major legislation passed. And then the final straw was the fact that there was going to be a debate. There was a debate about the debt ceiling and whether the debt ceiling would be raised or not. Now, I knew all along that they were going to raise it. And I think everybody kind of assumed that. But there was a lot of chatter about how it might not happen. And that could have definitely caused a big risk off sell bid in markets. Fortunately, it did not, because they reached a debt limit extension. But it's only a 2-month extension. So instead of being kind of running up into the middle of October, now we're looking at the middle of December. So we're going to have a Christmas debt ceiling debate all over again, which is typical Washington. You know, what's better to do 2 months from now than you can't do today? So,
they've got to earn their money. So they figure out ways to, how can I grab my paycheck and, well, perhaps
stay in the headlines.
Continue to negotiate this ad nauseum. And maybe that's how I can, well, you got to reelect me because we didn't get it finished. So now you need to elect me again.
Right. So yeah, and it's just the part and parcel of the game in Washington, you know, delay things until you absolutely have to make a decision. Then, you know, once the decision's been made, each side can take credit for coming through for the people, you know. Mm-hmm. They like doing that. But now the point is that, you know, we did see, this was the first quarter that we saw that kind of volatility. We saw some fairly aggressive selling end of July, end of August. And actually towards the end of September, we also saw a little dip, not quite as intense as the August and July sell-offs, but still there nonetheless. So every time the market started gaining a little bit more traction, then it had a sell-off. Every time it started gaining a little more traction, it had a sell-off. So now we're in October and we've seen a good start to October. Markets kind of coming back from some big selling. And there's a good reason for that. So we have some uncertainty now off the table. One of the things that caused uncertainty is a potential blow up of a company called Evergrande. They were a Chinese property company. Now, why does a Chinese property company cause problems in the U.S. markets? Well, because the worry was that there was a lot of debt that this Chinese real estate company was going to default on, and that could affect American banks and American debt holders and cause kind of what they call a debt contagion throughout the markets. And they were calling this like the China Lehman moment. Now, that is a conflation of the actual Lehman Brothers 2008 meltdown and what turned out to not be a real threat with the Evergrande thing. And I knew that would be the case. I mean, one of the things we were writing about in my newsletters is that these two things were not the equivalent. There was not the intense exposure to Evergrande debt that there was to Lehman debt. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a systemic risk. Plus, we didn't backstop Lehman Brothers. We, meaning the federal government, did not backstop Lehman Brothers, just let it collapse. Whereas the Chinese government quickly stepped in and said that they were going to restructure some of the debt. And basically they're going to backstop the Evergrande situation. So and because China is not a fully capitalist system where there's a separation between business and the economy. Neither is the U.S., but mm-hmm. we're much so like that, much more so than that. But China basically owns a lot of these companies. So if they want to backstop it, they will. And if they think it's in their interest, they will. And in this case, they did. So that's that whole China debt mess is off the table. And then, of course, the Washington uncertainty that I spoke of now, that's largely off the table, at least for now. Mm-hmm. The third thing that's off the table now is the Federal Reserve. So we knew the markets were expecting the Fed to basically come out and kind of say that they were going to start tapering quantitative easing within a couple of months and probably at a pace of around $15 billion a month until the middle of, say, 2022, and when things would be basically done. There'd be no more bond buying and no more quantitative easing, so as the common term is. And that's basically what the Fed signals. So they didn't signal a too aggressive taper, and they didn't signal a too kind of dovish taper where they're just going to go about it nice and slow, maybe 10 billion a month. So what they're doing is they're basically told the markets what they, we basically interpreted what we think is going to happen. So expectations are such that we think that's going to happen. So if the things change on that front, then of course, then, you know, the markets could adjust accordingly. But right now we're the market, the Fed is on target for what the market expects. Mm-hmm. And that's always a good thing, because it's always, it's not so much what the Fed does or what earnings do or what happens in, you know, in Washington, it's the expectations that Wall Street has. And if they, these events don't pan out the way expectations pan out, then you get a disconnect, and then you start, people start scrambling for to sell or to buy either way, because in on Wall Street and in the markets, the money will tell you what is being anticipated. Okay. Mm-hmm. The money dictates the events. So the, like if we're pricing in a good earnings quarter and a company doesn't have a good earnings quarter, then we have to readjust the pricing. So we are going to sell that stock to meet the earnings expectations. Conversely, if a stock beats on the earnings front and we're pricing it in for, you know, let's say $10 a share on earnings, but it comes out with a blowout $15 a share, well, we're going to buy the stock to reprice, mm-hmm. to, you know, up until those earnings. So that's actually something that investors need to understand. And some viewers on your show, like Wall Street's pricing in expectations. And if they are disappointed, they're going to sell the stock. If they're surprised on the upside, pleasantly surprised, happy, they're going to buy the stock. And that's how these things work.
Yeah, and that's the one great thing about you being our financial GPS here at the Unlock Your Wealth Show, is because you always give us that insight, and you're the one that came and said, look, the market isn't about today. It's what the expectation of the future. It's a forward-looking tool, and that's why we need to be so keyed in to what you're saying. And one of the things that, as you were talking about the Evergrande, that I really got a better sense of how that affected it and how there was the disconnect. And that wasn't a very good comparison with the Lehman Brothers from your Deep Woods article that you wrote about it. Mm, and yes. You detailed that. And that's the one thing I like to drive home about investing. And that's the big piece that you bring to the puzzle, is you bring that news cue interpretation, which is the media version of IQ, as you have so eloquently coined that term. And you help us interpret news cue. And it's not just, well, what are they saying, and taking it for face value. Like you always say about the Deep Woods, you peel back the layers of the onion skin and help us get there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great way to put it. I couldn't have put it better. You want to be able to, like, you know, the market is a forward-looking discount mechanism, as we call it. So in other words, we're discounting, not discounting in the sense of, you know, like a 10% discount, but we're pricing in what we think is going to happen.
Right. Time value of money.
Yes. And also just we're pricing in what our expectations are. So if you get, that's why on Wall Street, when you hear an announcement of earnings, like, yeah, the company came in with better than expected earnings.
Right.
It's all about the expectations. So now for the fourth quarter, I have expectations based upon the fact that the third quarter uncertainties are largely out of the way. I mean, the Fed's not completely out of the way. We'll have to see what happens in the upcoming meeting as far as the actual details of a tapering plan. But if it goes as expected, then we should be fine, and we shouldn't cause a lot of dislocation in markets in terms of like what we're expecting. Mm-hmm. Now, the Washington thing's off the table, the China thing's off the table, and the Fed's off the table largely. So what is on the table that we need to be concerned with next? That's the kind of fourth quarter, you know, either tailwinds or headwinds, depending upon what happens. Okay. So the first thing, which is, I'm glad is we're back to this, is earnings.
Okay.
Okay. Now this is going to be an interesting earnings season, because earnings we've already seen some companies and some big industrial companies warn about the fourth quarter due to a couple of key things. One is the supply chain disruptions.
That was my question.
And the second thing that we have, and a second issue, is inflation. Now, are these two things going to put pressure on revenues? Are they going to be, compress margins with you know, if you have to pay more for the cost of goods and you have to wait longer because you can't sell any many, is that going to compress margins? You bet it will. In certain industries, it's going to have an issue more than others. We've already seen a big issue with that in the semiconductor chip industry, but also in autos, and then a lot of downstream manufacturing and, you know, places like Lowe's and things like that. Although Lowe's had a great quarter, you know, there's a lot of, if people are paying more for stuff and they can't get stuff, that's going to compress margins. So that will be the interesting thing to watch when earnings season begins. And it's going to start actually this in the second week of October, but most likely it's not going to start in earnest until the third week of October. That's when we start getting industrial reports and bigger kind of more, you know, bellwether things. And then for the next 2 or 3 weeks, that's when we're going to have earnings, and it's going to be all said and done by like early November in terms of the main companies that are going to be reporting. So in October, mid-October, late, early November, that's what I'll be watching most to see if these earnings reports are really pressured by the markets. The other factor that I haven't mentioned is of course the Delta variant of COVID-19 that reemerged in the third quarter, and that kind of held stuff down. People were worried about that. So far, we haven't seen big margin compression on it hasn't been much of an effect on the earnings that we've seen or the rumblings we've seen so far, but that doesn't mean it won't. So we're going to have to be careful and see if that is a factor that's going to affect markets. If it is, that's going to be another tailwind or another headwind rather, you know, for the markets going into the rest of the year. Now, as far as tailwinds, of course, if earnings are better than expected or earnings are strong, earnings are, you know, meet expectations, that's going to be a positive for markets. And the one thing I would say is don't bet against earnings season, because for the last several quarters, people have been saying, oh, earnings are going to be, you know, slow down. They're probably not going to be as good as we thought. And boom, the companies still end up doing as well, if not better than expected. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not just that game that Wall Street plays where they under promise and over deliver. It's not just that. It's these companies are doing even better than they even thought they were going to do. Mm-hmm. So, and as a whole, like the S&P 500 wise, in terms of the earnings on the collective S&P, that's what we want to watch. Now, the other factor that is going to be a potential headwind, and it's already been somewhat of that, is the rise in bond yields. Okay. So when bond yields rise, money goes to bonds and away from equities, because you can get if you're getting a 2-3% yield on a 10-year treasury, then you don't need to take risk in them, you know, with equities that are performing that same amount. So that's when like a lot of the smart money, the big money kind of rotates in more into like the high yield performance of bonds. And if yields continue to rise, then we could see a migration out of equities into bonds. Now, that would be a headwind on the stock market going forward. And also if the bond, like, but the thing is to keep in mind is rising bond yields can signal higher growth expectations, which is a tailwind for stocks. Okay. So if we have economic growth expectations that are moving higher, that are moving bond yields higher, then that's a good thing for stocks. But if bond yields are moving higher because of some kind of exogenous threat to the markets, or people want a flight to safety, you know, flight to safety, or if people are like, or are worried about problems with the equity markets, then that could be an issue as well for them. So it's a negative. So you really have to watch and see what's going to happen when it comes to yields. What you want is a steady, orderly rise in bond yields, and not a spike higher in bond yields. And so far we've had a pretty steady orderly rise, but in the last week of September, early October, and there was like a lot of selling in markets, we saw the bond rise, bond yields rise. So I don't think we're in danger of a huge spike in bond yields, but you know, it depends on if the Fed decides to be a little bit more aggressive with its taper, then that could drive bond yields up as well. So all of these factors are like the kind of macro cocktail that I'll be watching in the fourth quarter, because that'll determine how the rest of the year plays out for stocks. Already, I mean, the S&P is up about 17% this year, year to date. And that's not too bad given all the, you know, all of the different related kind of headwinds that we've seen throughout the year, especially with COVID, with the Fed and things like that. So I think we're, if I had to like make a call right now, I would say we're going to finish up the year, you know, choppy and probably to the upside in the next quarter, but I wouldn't expect a huge surge in stock prices between now and the end of the year, but I don't expect a big plummet either. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to chop our way to the end of the year, which would still give the year, you know, something like a 17-18% gain on the S&P, which is much better than historical average. So we're still looking at another bull year, no matter what the slowdown has been in this past quarter.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your insight on the past quarter and what we have coming up, given all of the challenges that we've been seeing with supply chain and demand and Christmas coming up and, you know, the bonds starting to move in a particular direction, and giving us all these tools and resources that we need to be able to better manage our money and build wealth for now as well as the future. If folks want to find out more about the different services and publications that you offer, where can they go to find you? Because you have publications for all different levels of investment goals. And so can you just run through those and where they can find all of them?
Yeah, certainly. I'd be happy to. So all of my products, all my investment newsletter products can be found at jimwoodsinvesting.com. That's the umbrella site. You find a nice welcome video there. And it explains some of the services that I have. Well, there's a little bit about each of them. I'll give a brief synopsis of some of them. I have one called Successful Investing, which is for the long-term investor who wants to follow the major trends in the market so that we know when to get in and then out of the major trends in the equity markets, and explain how to do that in that service. And then I have a service called Intelligence Report, which is also for long-term investors, that where we concentrate on dividend paying stocks. And we also concentrate on kind of momentum trading stocks that supplement those long-term dividend stock holdings. So we have our long-term dividend portfolio, and then we have our shorter term, more a little bit more aggressive portfolio. But it's still not like it's not a trading service. It's more of an investment oriented, you know, quality company type service. Then I have my Bullseye Stock Trader service, which that is the more momentum oriented trading services that uses not only stocks, but stock options in order to maximize gains. And that's where you want to be if you want to swing for the fences and get the really big gains.
And that's my favorite one, by the way, because that's the one I'm making the most money with.
There you go. So we've done quite well in that service, hope to continue to do well going into the end of the year, because look, as I mentioned about what I expect for the end of the year, even though the market as an aggregate might be choppy and might kind of just push its way, you know, with some volatility into the end of the year, there's always going to be stocks. There are always going to be stocks with certain characteristics that make investors want to buy them at that time. And that is those characteristics and the actual timing of those purchases is what I do in the Bullseye Stock Trader. So if you want to be able to like make money, even if the market's choppy, that's the kind of service you want to be into. And then finally, I have a service called the Eagle Eye Opener, which is a relatively new service for us. It's a recap every day of the macro, the big macro trends that happen that day in the market. and how the market did. It's like a it's like a market recap, only with a, that one or two onion skin layers underneath to tell you why the market did that way and what to look out for in the following weeks. So there's that product as well. It's called the Eagle Eye Opener. So those are the main products. And you can find out all about those, like I said, at jimwoodsinvesting.com. I encourage everyone to do so.
Well, thank you so much for kicking off yet another season. It's always good to have you as our financial GPS, helping us navigate the waters of investing. And for more great resources, tools, and information to help you overcome your personal and professional challenges to get out of debt, achieve financial freedom, and live the life of your dreams, just visit our website at unlockyourwealthtoday.com, where you can find Jim's show page and all the links to his great resources and so much more. And for additional interviews from some of the hottest minds in personal finance, investing, real estate, crypto, you name it, we've got it here. And we've got some amazing interviews still left from Freedom Fest, where we're going to start talking about those specific topics, gold, what beta investing is, all these really great tools. We've got people coming up this season, so it's going to be pretty exciting. If you are struggling to get ahead and you can pay your bills, but you don't have the cash to start investing, what if I could give you an option that would help you achieve debt elimination in as little as 5 to 7 years? We're talking your mortgage, student loans, car payments, credit cards, all of it. Wipe it out in as little as 5 to 7 years. If that sounds of interest to you because you want to start out with Jim's services and begin investing and building wealth for your family and your future, then just visit unlockmywealth.com and download my free ebook that explains exactly how you can eliminate all of your debt by using some industry insider information about the banking industry and how you can turn that information into your advantage. Just visit unlockmywealth.com. And again, for the show, unlockyourwealthtoday.com. I'm Heather Wagenhaus, and I'm making success simple for you. Now go out and unlock your wealth today.
Unlockyourwealthtoday.com is produced by Heather Wagenhaus and the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation. Unlock Your Wealth Today and affiliate brands are copyrighted 2021 by Heather Wagenhaus, all rights reserved. For more information about the Keys to Riches financial philosophy or this week's free strategy, please visit unlockyourwealthtoday.com.